For guys, size matters. But bigger is definitely not better for guys with overdeveloped breasts. The condition is called gynecomastia, and Dr. Frank Lista of the Plastic Surgery Clinic can help. Dr. Lista is a world-renowned plastic surgeon who has perfected the procedure that corrects gynecomastia with virtually no scarring. Visit theplasticsurgeryclinic.ca and size up your options for downsizing male breasts. theplasticsurgeryclinic.ca.
When the mic goes on, it's like ringing the dinner bell. Let the salivating begin. Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports. Dig in on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Still Wednesday, the 10th of February, 2016, and this is Primetime Sports. We are coast-to-coast on the Sportsnet family of networks. I am Bob McCowan, and that, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, is John Shannon.
Hello, Robert.
John. Traditionally, I read the lineup at the beginning of the program, along with the audience. I did not realize there were two pages on the lineup.
It is huge. It's a huge page.
So I haven't given all the names yet. Brian Cooper will join us in a few minutes. He'll be in studio. Scott Rabb of Esquire magazine interviewed Donald Trump for the cover story of the February 16th edition. Talk a little politics. Ernie Johnson of Turner Sports is in town for the, well, I don't know if he's in town yet, for the All-Star festivities this weekend. We'll find out.
Donnie Meehan, coming to town if he isn't.
Right. Donnie Meehan, well, everybody is. Donnie Meehan of Newport Sports will be with us, and Luke Cyphers, journalism professor at Plattsburgh.
We are getting university professors every day.
I know.
On this show.
We're being edumacated. Well, the big story, one of the big stories yesterday was the Blue Jays signing of Josh Donaldson to a 2-year contract. The breakdown of the contract allegedly is $11.65 million this year, $17 million next year. This will take care of the arbitration situation for the next 2 years. But it is an intriguing deal. The general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays joins us. Ross Atkins is with us. Hello, Ross. How are you?
Great, Bob. How are you doing today?
Excellent.
Thanks for having me. Thanks, John, for having me on.
Thank you for joining us. This is really an interesting deal, and I'm very curious about the motivation behind it. You know, we speculated when there was space between you and Josh's camp in terms of the arbitration for this upcoming season, albeit a nominal, apparently nominal amount of money. We speculated, you know, isn't there a real chance that the Blue Jays would like to sign Josh to a long-term contract, take care of all the arbitration years, and maybe get a year or two or three even at the back end of that? And we were sort of focused a bit on that possibility. When this deal was announced, I was kind of taken back by it. I didn't know what to make of it. Tell me what this deal means and why it's a good deal for the Blue Jays.
Yeah, so, you know, we would, could you have gotten that deal done for us with a couple of years of free agency? That would have been fantastic.
Well, sure, because Rogers gives me all the money I need. So I don't have a budget. I can do anything you need. Just call anytime.
No, we would love to have an extension with Josh. You know, really, it always comes down to, you know, bridging those gaps and agreeing on what those values are, the numbers of years. And we talked about a variety of scenarios and a variety of extensions and multi-year deals. So what it came down to were a couple of things. It sounds like you have a great understanding of the arbitration process and that the club is protected by it and the players end up being paid fairly based on usually comparable players from the past and comparable performances. So, you know, in this case, it was unique in that they're always unique when you have MVP-type performances because those comps are fewer and fewer. So that was the biggest challenge, is that we were getting into record-setting territory. So how far do you go beyond record-setting territory? And that is where the disagreements were and why we started to work towards an extension, because it was in the player's best interest. That And really, that is the truth of the matter, is that we would have most likely been better off just going year to year,
right?
Other than the fact that you have to then go through that process again with an MVP player and a player that we felt was worthy of guaranteeing and us absorbing some risk for him to feel that we, you know, well beyond appreciated his performance, but just truly appreciate what he's meant to this team, to the city. So that was the initiative. That was the goal. He feels great about it. You know, we've guaranteed him money for the next couple of years. We don't have to worry about arbitration. We can focus on our relationship and hopefully focus on a long career with the Toronto Blue Jays.
Is goodwill part of the gesture and the importance of this gesture? Because truthfully, as you've said, economically, it probably doesn't benefit the Blue Jays at all, and probably benefits Josh a little bit, but it doesn't get you through his final arbitration year either. So is long-term goodwill part of the plan?
Well, there's interesting. So, as you just mentioned, so the Blue Jays benefit from not going through that third year because now we have that opening again, and we have the chance to negotiate again. And so, yes, goodwill was a part of it. And I guess if that's the term, I guess what I was trying to say is we were trying to show him how much we appreciated his accomplishment, and that was one way that we could do it. It was a request of his, and something that he was motivated to do, and therefore we were too. And it doesn't mean that you have to have an MVP type season to do it. Every scenario is a little bit different, and in this case we felt like it was the best deal for both parties.
And, you know, Ross, there are lots of people that aren't familiar with the arbitration system in Major League Baseball. So effectively, though, even though you signed him to a two-year extension, correct me if I'm wrong, you still have a third year of arbitration, so you really have him for 3 years, right?
Correct.
So it reads as a 2-year contract, but the reality is he's here for an additional 3 years, at least minimum.
Right, and that's what I was trying to explain. That's where, you know, as you know, had we guaranteed, we were open to guaranteeing 3 years too. We were open to extension years, and it's just it becomes obviously it's a significant investment. That's obvious. But it also becomes only more and more complex when you try to define what those values should be, when you're already at record-setting territory. So, you know, that it just takes a lot of work. We felt like it would be much more powerful to have the relationship, a little bit of goodwill, as you guys have said, and, you know, so that we could focus on a future together after having closed the book on 2 years with one more year of arbitration. But, you know, maybe we'll be able to close that one too.
How would you categorize the conversations between yourself, the president, and Josh's management? Amicable?
You know, they're all they're lengthy, late at night, a lot of note taking, a lot of, you know, there was mostly sharing ideas, and mostly with us it was just, as you know, all about a win-win negotiation. How can we do what's in the best interest of the organization long term while working towards what would make Josh Donaldson feel valued and appreciated here for what he's done.
How close did you really get to buying into free agency?
You know what? We really got relatively focused. We got quickly focused on a 2 or 3 year after talking about the different interests, the different sides, the different values. But it wasn't a matter of huge variances and huge disagreements as much as it was only having so much time to do that. So the reasons that we shifted towards that were, let's get this covered so we can build a relationship together before we start, you know, discussing those numbers that will be into free agent years. So, you know, it's hard to place a number on how close or say very versus not very close at all. It was really more about a mutual agreement after discussing some of the interest that it would be best to focus on the relationship first.
with Ross Atkins, the general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays. One of the things you may have discovered already, but certainly will over time as you move through your career here in Toronto, is that Toronto sports fans almost uniquely almost demand to be loved by their favorite athletes. It is, you know, we fans here place a high priority on athletes who want to stay in our city. We've had some that have chosen to leave, and I think that has irked some fans. Do you have any sense as to how Josh feels about playing in Toronto?
Yeah, I think he would love to be here long term. He loves the city. He's told me that. I think he really appreciated how the fans embraced him. He recognizes how unique this is to play for a country, to play for a city that is thriving, young, energetic, international, full of energy, and wanting a winner. He felt it firsthand last year, and I think that he would be driven and motivated to be here.
The other thing you should be, I'm sure you know by now, Ross, that this is a market that really puts a lot of accent on watching what suits do for their jobs, more so than in any other. You know, there's more analysis of Brendan Shanahan, Lou Lamoriello, Masai Ujiri, Dwayne Casey, Mike Babcock, your manager, your president, and you than any other town that I know of.
Yeah.
It's the truth.
That's interesting. That is interesting to me. And to me, all about the players. It is all about the players. That's the fun part. And, you know, I think, you know, professional sports management is interesting, and it is a job I am very happy to have. I feel very fortunate to have it. But, man, there's nothing better than playing shortstop and pitching and hitting home runs and watching guys hit triples and hitting the ball, you know, into the gap. So, you know, that's why we do these jobs.
Yeah.
And what I love so much about them. But that is interesting. That is interesting feedback, and it's great. You know, I'll embrace it as much as I can and do everything I can to make this organization better.
Quickly, give me your take on Gavin Floyd and where he fits into your plans.
You know what? He finished so strong last year and has a track record of having been a very good major league starter, certainly above average. And, you know, even average major league starter is an incredible asset to any baseball organization. So with that track record and having finished strong from another elbow injury last year, we felt like it was worth giving him an opportunity to impact this team. And with the thought that there is some upside to him in the bullpen if it doesn't work out as a starter. Typically, guys that can start are usually, and I hope there aren't a lot of relief pitchers listening right now, but usually those starting pitchers are in those roles for a reason. It's because they can get through a lineup a couple of times. They, in some cases, will just have a deeper arsenal, so more pitches and more command of multiple pitches. And so when you put a guy that can start into a relief role, sometimes you'll see some upside, as you've seen, and as is the case in a lot of major league bullpens right now. A lot of these guys are starters that didn't pan out or starters that got injured. And so we felt like there's some starting protection in Gavin and some upside in the event that he slides to the bullpen. He was up to 95 last year out of the bullpen, finishing up from his injury, and felt like it was worth giving him the opportunity.
We will let you go. We thank you very much for your time, and we'll look forward to chatting again. And not too long. When are you heading down to Dunedin? Soon?
Yeah, I'll be there next Friday.
There you go.
Looking forward to it. Bob and John, thank you guys very much for having me on.
Thanks, Ross. Ross Atkins is the general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays. Again, they signed the American League Most Valuable Player, Josh Donaldson, to a 2-year contract worth $11.65 million this year, $17 million in 2017. And I still don't really understand the basis for it. Do you?
Well,
I mean, other than he was. It's a gesture.
Well,
maybe it's goodwill that you plant now. But
well, you got.
For me, I don't see the upside.
But no, but you were one that was, you just would have said, hey, give them the arbitration dollars that they wanted and walk away. Is that what you would have done? Because I mean, you were harping that the $450,000 they were apart was a
ridiculous
mistake.
Well, it was ridiculous.
So just give Donaldson his arbitration dollars and let it happen for 1 year and then do it again next year again?
Yeah.
Okay.
Either that or get a long-term contract and buy into his non-arbitration.
Yeah, no. I understand that part. I understand.
I mean,
that's what I would.
That's what I thought they were going to try and do. I'm not saying that Donaldson would be amenable to that. A lot of guys aren't. A lot of guys want to go through the free agent process. I understand that. But it's kind of like this is sort of a little bit pregnant deal.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying it's a bad situation. I'm just saying I don't understand it.
Well,
I don't understand what
Ross,
the advantage is.
Ross hinted at it there. We may hear about a third year in this deal.
But the third year is irrelevant to me. The years that matter to me are the years after arbitration, when his free agent years. Those are the years I'd be looking to buy. If I can't buy those, why am I buying arbitration eligible years?
And perhaps there's a wink, wink, nudge, nudge that they can't talk about.
Well, but I asked him about that.
I know, but that they can't talk about, that they will.
Oh, they can talk about it.
Yeah. By the way,
he acted surprised that
you know, management people in this town are under a microscope. This is the worst town in the history of mankind for putting people off the ice, off the field, off the court under the microscope.
Well, we don't talk about the athletes very much. We talk about the management people
sure,
all the time.
That's all we talk about.
No. Our friend Brian Cooper, the president of S&E Sponsorship Group, joins us in studio and our sports business expert.
Donaldson in the second year is getting close to your salary.
No, he's not there yet, but...
Close.
He's still young.
I said close.
He's still young. See if he's still doing it when he's my age.
Exactly
I'm
right.
I'm pretty sure he ain't.
Exactly right.
Pretty sure that's not going to happen.
let's be honest.
So the Honorable John Tory was on with us mm-hmm. earlier, the mayor of the city of Toronto.
Is he going to be driving an Uber during the week? No,
they're driving a snowplow,
they've
maybe.
They canceled the taxi protest.
Oh, thank goodness.
Yeah.
Come to their senses.
Tory didn't take any credit for it, really.
Okay.
But I also said to him, we've had an extremely mild winter. We have had way more days with no snow on the ground than any snow on the ground. And it's going to be minus a million on Saturday NBA festivities.
We are living up to We the North. We're living up to We the North. But I got to tell you, last year's NBA All-Star game in New York City was twice as cold as it's expected to be this Saturday. It was the coldest I've ever seen New York City last year. It was ridiculous. People were, just falling to pieces.
Well, the high's going to be zero Fahrenheit. Minus, I don't know what, 16, 18 or something?
I think it may have been 15 below Fahrenheit last year. So, and you know what? You're going to see a lot of fur coats like you've never seen in your life. A lot of bling.
It doesn't freeze.
The boys will be wearing their fur coats and their toques, huh?
And it doesn't freeze inside the limo.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't.
You know, so.
Yeah. I'll be out there standing, waiting for a car.
So are you going to everything?
You know what? I was fortunate to participate as one of the members of the steering committee, and so I've been invited to a fair amount of things, as well as involved with Canada Basketball as sitting on the board for the last 8 years. So, yeah, I'll be going to a fair amount of the activities,
as
and
usual,
I look forward to it.
As usual, you have not invited me to anything that you're going to.
Bob, would you like to come to anything? Would you like to come to anything?
No.
Okay.
Not
That's
not
exactly
now.
But you know what? What a great, great opportunity for the city. And I'm sure the mayor explained why. But, 49 languages, 215 mm-hmm. countries that this thing's broadcast into. And when you look at an Olympics where you have to build infrastructure and you have to spend taxpayer money to get that type of exposure, and I'm sure the Olympics is more than this, but, this is a ton of exposure, positive exposure for this city.
For 2 days.
It's actually more, John. It's like 3 days. And, it's not just basketball players. It's the Kevin Harts. It's the, actors and other celebrities that really love the sport and that hang around the players. So I think it's just going to be wonderful in terms of an economic input to the city, but also just shining a bright light on the city to other countries around the world.
I should have asked this of the mayor. I didn't think to ask it. What do you think this costs? What does it cost the city? Who picks up the tab for all this? Is it the Raptors? Is it the city? Is it a combination? Is it the NBA itself?
Well, look, I think it's a combination. Mostly, it's the Raptors. Anyone that hosts an All-Star game, they usually lose money. $2 to $3 million.
Well, what's their benefit? I understand how the CFL works with the Grey Cup.
And you know what? And I think there's stats that show any city that has hosted this has a trailing effect for 2 or 3 or 4 years of increased merchandise sale, increased ticket sales, increase. They turn the casual fan into a little bit more of an avid fan. And so they're building the pipeline for down the road. I mean, you'll be hard-pressed to find anybody in the city that doesn't know that the NBA All-Star is coming here and doesn't know that the Raptors are hosting it and doesn't know that two of the Raptors star players are on it. And so, you know, it's an indirect dollar effect, but it definitely has a positive effect for the team that's hosting it.
So the CFL's Grey Cup is purchased by a team.
Right.
Correct?
Right.
So they pay a set amount for the rights.
It's the same format.
This is the same format? So you buy the game and you accrue the revenues?
You assume certain costs related to the game.
Who gets the tickets?
The league gets the tickets.
The league gets the tickets. So that's different.
Certain costs and opportunity costs by hosting the game itself. And, you know, if you could break even by, you know.
What revenue streams can you generate if you don't have ticket sales?
Well, you could, like the parties. Like, you could be hosting True North, which is down on Bremner Boulevard on the weekend, that will there be hosting parties throughout the weekend. And so you can make revenue on based on that.
So the bottom line is you're not putting an all-star game on in any city with the thought that you are putting millions of dollars in your pockets.
Unlike the Grey Cup, yes. You know, where the Grey Cup is where those Grey owners, they make money, they take the risk and pay. Yeah. And in this case, that's not the situation. They do get, as I said, indirect trailing dollars and building the brand and the brand equity in that marketplace. And the city itself has a tremendous benefit, as I mentioned to you earlier.
Well, it's not a bad thing for the city. I mean, holy smokes, it's phenomenal for the city.
Well, I don't know if it's
hosting an international event or an event that has international consequence.
It's an all-star game.
Or profile, and you're not putting up a penny.
Let me ask you this.
Terms of infrastructure, capital expenditure.
But let me ask you this. You're in that world of sponsorship.
Mm-hmm.
We've got the NBA All-Star Game in this town.
Mm-hmm.
We've got the World Cup of Hockey coming.
Mm-hmm.
The World Junior Hockey Championships are going to be here for a certain part of coming up.
For the prelims.
There's going to be an outdoor game here. I don't care what anybody says. There's going to be an outdoor game here. Is there enough sponsorship dollars in this city for all of this stuff to happen? And the Leafs are going to have their 100th anniversary along with the NHL. Is there enough money in this marketplace for everybody to thrive sponsorship-wise?
Without a doubt. You know, and when I look at the landscape, specifically, John, hockey, it's still the mass sport that people use in sponsorship to reach and impact consumers with. And so, you know, is it a crowded landscape? Without a doubt. But, you know, the outdoor games, they seem to be doing pretty well on top of what, you know, sponsors already do for the regular season. The playoffs, they get additional sponsor dollars for all the playoffs. And so when you're having these special events, major events, just like the Olympics, people step up to the plate because they are special.
You believe the World Cup's going to be that successful?
John, I've done 3 contracts now for the World Cup.
Already, huh?
Yeah, already. And they haven't been announced as of yet. And that's just my shop, and I have another one coming.
Yeah.
So I don't think they're going to have any problems on sponsorship.
Gary Bettman announced a contract extension, a rather lengthy one.
I know.
Surprise you at all?
Well, it does a little bit. You know, I why it surprised me, Gary's done a tremendous job. I mean, just look at numbers don't lie, and he's done a tremendous job, and he's expanded the league. He's expanded every revenue stream that they've ever had from $400 million to $3 billion in terms of revenue for the league. The question I have is, Bill, you know, Bill Dalio, I think, is 52 now. And I don't know if you remember Russ Granick. Russ Granick was...
Waited and waited and finally said, I'm getting out of here.
Right.
And then...
And then Adam comes in 4 or 6 years later. But at what time does... And Bill, I think, is, you know, highly qualified to take that position. And I'm sure Gary has groomed him for that position. But Gary extended, and correct me if I'm wrong, is it 6 or 8 years?
Till 2022.
So Bill
it's actually a 7-year deal.
So Bill is 52 now. He'll be 59 if and when he gets that.
You know what? And well, and to put the basketball comparison in there, Gary will have been commissioner for 30 years, which is the same amount of time
that David was.
That David was the commissioner of the NBA.
Right.
So
well, that's interesting.
And he will be only one year short of Clarence Campbell.
Wow.
Who was the president of the NHL for 31 years.
Which I assume is the record.
Yes.
Yeah. Actually, I saw a special on Pete Rozelle this past weekend that was outstanding.
But in the end, I think, you know, you talked about Gary's legacy. You know, in the 1990s, creating the American Equalization Fund for Canadian teams when the dollar was at 65 cents, expanding at that point. His next decision about not expanding might be the more important one. Because I still think there's a real opportunity not to expand that they're investigating, as opposed to, you know, Las Vegas is a cinch and Quebec City's close.
And the only reason, and you know, you may be right on that, and I haven't even given thought to that. The only reason is because they have had such a tremendous jump in their revenue streams in every area.
Sure.
The merchandise deal that they just did with Fanatics and Adidas, mm-hmm. the NBC Rogers deal on the broadcast side, the sponsorship deals that they're doing with specifically with the outdoor games, specifically with the World Cup of Hockey and their partnership with the PA. Mm-hmm. And so the owners, they always used to be that I need. And that may not be as acute of a situation. It may be an isolated franchise, but not across the board.
I mean, if you do the math on league disbursements, let's say the league disbursements are $25 million per year. So over the next 10 years, you're going to get $250 million in disbursements with the league. I'm just throwing out a number. If you expand twice with the two teams, you're going to
get double that.
You're going to get $30 million once. Well, yeah. But then you lose a percentage of your $25 million over that period of time.
You do,
and you run the risk
of watering down the actual product,
and you run the risk of allowing those two teams to be revenue sharing teams that you actually have to pay to stay alive.
I mean, yeah, but that doesn't come close to. I mean, that could only be on a per team basis $2 million less. I mean, it's not that much that you'd be losing.
If you're the Toronto Maple Leafs, you paid $29.
You don't want it. You want to be playing. I get that.
$29 million in revenue sharing last year, Brian.
You have a
$29 million.
Yeah, you have a good point. And it may be the decision that they make, but you know, usually teams don't go and open up the expansion process. Leagues don't open the expansion process and don't have qualified applicants and not expand. I haven't seen that as yet. It would be prudent. It may be the most prudent business thing to do.
Just give the deposit back.
Yeah, just give the deposit back. Well, no, actually, you know, the deposit is non-refundable.
No, there was $10 million you had to pay. There was $8 million of it that was refundable. Okay. So they'd keep $2 million to do the due diligence.
Well, but I look again. You know, Gary gets the money he gets because of the success he's had in all those areas to date.
Have you met Michael Friesdahl yet?
Yes, I met Michael and his wife Anita, and without a doubt, I've, you know, as you know, we have multiple clients at MLS.
I should tell people that Michael is the COO of Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment. You couldn't possibly have picked somebody more different than his predecessor, who came in in a white Cadillac convertible. With a sign that says, "Hi, you know, I'm Tim Lewicki," and never shut up the whole time he was here.
But the organizational chart is different, though.
Well, the scope of work has changed. You know what? I think what they see at MLSNA is that, you know, I've got great presidents of the clubs that are actually going to operate the club and report into the board separately. And so the scope of work is now the day-to-day business of managing the building, managing all of the revenues that are associated with the sponsorship for the team, the ticketing elements to it. It's not, you know, having those GMs report to you with the budget.
Yeah, but they didn't want another, you know, star.
Well, wait a second. I love Tim. Tim's a force of nature. Tim's an alpha dog that, you know, walks
we
into
We get
their,
all that.
Yeah.
We know who he
and
is.
No, and Michael, but, you know.
They wanted the complete and utter antithesis.
And they got that.
That's what they went looking for, didn't they?
Yeah, I believe. And, you know, and I said that the only time you're going to see Michael in the public, in terms of media, et cetera, is the day that he got hired. And now he's going to go about the business of operating the company.
Okay, but the All-Star game that we're talking about is one of I think it's one of Tim's legacies.
Without a doubt.
Okay. I drive on the Gardner Expressway every day. I drive by BMO, and I see, you know, the expansion, and I see the roof going on.
That was Tim's legacy.
Tim's legacy.
Yeah.
In the end, was for the short period of time Tim was here, because it was less than 24 months in reality, was he good for MLSE?
And you know what? Tim provided a vision to expand the business. Tim provided a vision that, you know, we're not just the four teams and the venues that we have already. We're going to take over the Santa Claus Parade and pro bono and represent them. We're going to change, you know, what the stadium looks like. We're going to look for new partners that we haven't looked before. And you know what? He provided a huge vision. I got to tell you, the other side of this is MLS&E has a senior leadership team that are experienced pros.
True,
that have been there. Hopkinson and Tom Pastore, those guys have been there since I was there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so they know the business. And they're well respected within NHL and NBA circles. They, you know, they often come in and get ranked in the top three of ticket sales, of retention of ticket programs,
I would argue,
of service.
Some people would argue, I wouldn't be one of them because I work there and I do have a lot of respect for those guys, that my mother could have sold tickets for the Toronto Maple Leafs and for the Toronto Raptors. And I could have sold sponsorships in this town.
Disrespect your mother.
You know what? And Bob says that. Bob used to say, well, Federice's monkey could fill that place. But you know what? That's not true.
Okay.
You know, it's about servicing the customer. And look, they've had a rough road in terms of the performance of the team.
You
know, they've, well, yeah, and they've had to.
Teams.
Teams, and they've had to develop different campaigns to keep the fans engaged, to keep the brand equity positive in this marketplace. It's not just about answering the phone and putting a bum in a seat. So I think they've done a pretty good job on the trying times.
So in the end, was that a yes or a no on LiWiki? Because I asked the question again. Was he good?
Look at me.
In 24 months, was he good for the company, or was he?
He was good in the 24. He was good for the 24 months. I don't think he fit into the situation with the three-headed ownership group.
Okay.
And I think he may have been more aggressive than they thought they were getting. And I think, you know, these guys are prudent businessmen. And, you know, two telcos and Larry's company, I mean, they may be aggressive, but he was American aggressive, you know, in a lot of ways, where it rubbed some people the wrong way.
No. Last thing before we let you go. Burger King has announced they're going to put hot dogs in the menu in the U.S. Why is Burger King not putting hot dogs in the menu in Canada? Can you explain
Can't I get the clothes I want on the Banana Republic?
Well, I'd
website.
Like to know that too.
And, you know, exactly.
We talked about it, four colors of cars yesterday. That's it.
I don't understand.
How about breakfast all day at the Golden Arches?
I agree.
We can't get that either.
I don't get it either. And I have no idea why they probably shouldn't have started here as a test market.
Screw the test market. They already decided to put them into every location in the U.S.
In a country,
and they're not here.
In a country with a population the size of California, this is the perfect test market.
That's what Ohio is.
And what is a company named Burger King doing selling hot dogs?
You know, what is McDonald's selling breakfast? What is
Tim
Hortons selling steak sandwiches now? Come on.
Well, who owns Tim Hortons? Shoppers
Drug Mart is selling Loblaws products and Predator's Choice. If mass retailers is becoming that, just that, mass retailing.
Well, I blame you.
Okay.
We all blame you, Coop.
I'm good. I got big shoulders.
Yeah, he don't care. He's going to the All-Star festivities.
Oh,
he's going to
here
the
we
black
go.
Tie Bob, thing. He's going to hang out with all the tall people.
But, you know, like you ask him and he goes, no.
Do you want to go out? You want to go out this weekend, Bob?
With you?
Yeah.
Oh, bite me. You're not going anywhere.
I got to work.
He's going. He'll go to everything.
You know what?
Is your wife in town?
I'm in the service business.
Your wife's in town for this weekend, too.
For this, yes.
Sure, she comes into town when all
the
events are on.
Yeah, I know.
Have you ordered your limo?
An Uber.
An Uber.
Oh, good. Yeah, well, that makes you happy with the taxi guys.
I'm going to get hit when I walk outside the street.
Yeah, be careful of those yellow cars speeding by, Brian.
I'm going to sell my parking spot this weekend.
Should I alert my wife? Are you coming for dinner tonight?
No, I actually spoke to your wife earlier.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Who are you going with? Don't talk to me. Michael Jordan. Who are you going with now tonight?
Oh, you know what? Nobody.
Oh, you liar.
Nope.
Brian Cooper, the president of S&E Sponsorship Group. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, gents.
Scott Rabb of Esquire Magazine interviewed Donald Trump for the cover story of the Feb 16 issue of Esquire. He also has some thoughts on the Cleveland Browns. We'll talk to him when Primetime continues on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
Now Jeff Blair can tell you bedtime stories. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher and listen anytime you want. Sweet dreams. Sportsnet 590, The Fan on demand. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Before the hour, Primetime continues coast to coast on the Sportsnet radio and television networks. Bob McCowan, John Shannon in our Toronto studios. Ernie Johnson of Turner Sports, Don Meehan, Newport Sports Management. Luke Cyphers, journalism professor, Plattsburgh University, all coming up on the show. Toronto has kind of become the big brother for Cleveland. People in Cleveland will hate that, won't they?
Oh, yeah. It's not that far as the crow flies.
No, I mean, it's right across the river, the lake there.
Mm-hmm.
If they had a bridge, wouldn't take more than 2.5 hours to get there, don't you think?
Well, it takes 3.5 now, Bob.
Well, no, but take 2.5. I think we should build a bridge, especially with all the people coming and going from here to Cleveland.
A bridge to Cleveland. This could be the name of a book, A Bridge to Cleveland.
I'm going
to
talk a little bit about some Cleveland stuff, Brown stuff, Indian stuff in a second, but I wanted to... Scott Rabb joins us from Esquire magazine. Hello, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks.
You got the opportunity.
I lied. I'm extremely disturbed by both the idea of a bridge to Toronto and by the United States presidential terrain. Please proceed.
Well, we got into that a little bit yesterday. It's pretty difficult to avoid. New Hampshire last night was really no surprise, but. So you got a chance to sit down with the Donald for the Feb 16 issue of Esquire magazine. First of all, what did you take into the interview in terms of an opinion?
I've known other billionaires. I've known them in the journalistic sense.
Right.
I've known other real estate developer billionaires. And so I was not unfavorably disposed toward Mr. Trump as a real estate developer billionaire. On the other hand, I'm not a young man, and what I've seen happen in presidential politics over the decades, and it has been a few decades, had led me to the opinion that the sign that Donald Trump's message was resonating with so many millions of my fellow countrymen and women was kind of terrifying. So both those things.
Well, I'm pleased to hear that, but one wonders why. What does this say about America? That they are prepared, it would appear, to seriously consider Donald Trump as the next president of the United States of America. What does this say?
One of the things that it says, and this term of art in the media here may not be used north of the border, low information voter. I don't know if that's something that people in the great north have used.
Yeah, we have them, no question. We're not superior in that way.
Well, here we're talking about dolts. We're talking about ignorant and or stupid people. So there's no sense of history there, and there's certainly no popular mass medium that spends any time here trying to contextualize anything. Everything is driven, and Trump's campaign in particular has been driven by a constant thrumming, especially of the cable news networks, whether it's CNN, MSNBC, or Fox. He is in front of everyone all the time. So you combine a certain segment of the population who really can't process anything but their emotions, and that's really it. They are not presented with, nor are they capable of digesting the kind of context, historical, political, and otherwise, that would enable them to filter the message through anything other than their outrage.
Now, this,
and really, that's what you've got.
This is not meant to be rhetorical, but when you met Donald Trump and talked to Donald Trump, is there anything there?
Yeah. He's a very charismatic. You're in the presence of certain people, and they don't have to be celebrities. They could be a guy at the corner bar. But people have presence, and that presence is amplified by setting, in his case, the 25th, 26th floor Trump Tower. He's a healthy, a robust-looking man. He's not a youngster, but he dresses well. He's very presentable. He's forceful. He can dominate a conversation. I may have some moves as an interviewer, but you're not gonna push Donald Trump off his game.
No, you're right.
So there's something there, but none of it, at least to the extent I can see the future, none of it will play well in the White House as the most powerful human being in the world. Nominally, that's the position. You are the most powerful single person in the world in terms of the means at your disposal to do good and evil. So all the stuff that I think he has going for him, which is quite real, got to give the man his due as a reality television star, as a real estate developer, certainly as a campaigner. And he seems to be, a warm family man to the extent that one can make such a judgment. But none of it qualifies him even remotely to sit in the White House.
Much as I would like, and I know John would too, to continue the conversation on Trump, we do host a sports show, and people, not you. It's not you. We'd have you on for 2 hours and probably not be short on any questions, but the audience is probably tapping their foot like Sonic the Hedgehog saying, move on to sports here. So let me get a couple things in real quickly here. We got about 2 minutes. Did the Browns cover up Johnny Manziel showing up drunk to practice?
If they had, it would be consistent with their behavior during the Ray Farmer, Mike Pettine era. I don't know. The people that I talk to, I'm not a beat writer. The people that I talk to on the beat have seen such behavior before. In this case, it is plausible, and based on past performance, it would shock no one who follows the Browns, fans, media, people within the league. It wouldn't surprise anybody.
Do you think he has a future in football?
I don't know that he has a future at all. I'm of a mind that the disease model of addiction and alcoholism applies here, and that when you finally hit bottom, it can very well be in a cemetery or in jail. So to the extent that he has a future at all, I can see a turnaround. I certainly believe in miracles of recovery, because a lot of us have seen it in our daily lives with loved ones. So in that case, he's a talented young quarterback who isn't stupid. I mean, despite the behavior, I don't think it's driven by a lack of intelligence or some character flaw. So, yeah, theoretically, I fear, however, given what we've heard in terms of the restraining order and the suicide threats, I fear that he'll never give himself a chance to have a career in the NFL.
If he survives this summer, will some other team give him an opportunity to play, assuming the Browns are going to release him?
In the current climate, the Cowboys, they have Greg Hardy on their roster. It's a less dicey proposition than it should be, probably. I don't know that the league is really prepared to step in and prevent the Cowboys or any other team from giving Manziel a shot. I think you would have to have some means in place. And, for a guy like Josh Hamilton, baseball, it was hiring someone to basically, be his companion 24/7. Under those circumstances, maybe it's worth a try, but at some point, and not for the sake of the game or the integrity of the badge, but simply for John Manziel's own good, it should follow, some rules, like extended rehab and walking the walk after the release. He went through 10 weeks at a very serious rehab facility last summer, did nothing.
Yeah, to help clearly. I have 10 seconds before I let you go. A yes or no answer. Can Trump become the next president?
Yes.
It is possible, isn't it?
Yes.
Holy mackerel. Scott, it's always our pleasure to talk to you. Thanks, pal. We'll talk to you again soon, I hope.
Thank you.
Scott Rabb is with Esquire magazine, a Clevelander who follows Browns sports and Indian sports. We wanted to get into some of the other Cleveland relationships with Toronto, especially since our baseball team is being run by a couple of guys who ran the Indians, but
I'm amazed in the Manziel.
Time is our enemy.
I'm amazed in the Manziel situation that the league has not stepped in and almost forced him to go to rehab one more time. I mean, that happens in other leagues. That happens in other leagues.
Yeah, don't happen in the National Football League. When we come back, the legendary Ernie Johnson of Turner Sports, Don Meehan of Newport, and Luke Cyphers, journalism prof at Plattsburgh University. This is Primetime.
This hour of Primetime Sports is brought to you by Sisley for Honda.